Hello, everyone. Please keep supporting Gene Valentino's Truth Podcast. We need our voice to get out there far and wide and help save our country.
With breaking news and political commentary from a public servant, serial entrepreneur, community leader, philanthropist, and American patriot, and a darn nice guy, it's time for the Grassroots Truthcast and your host, Gene Valentino.
Hi, friends, Gene Valentino, and welcome to another episode of Gene Valentino's Grassroots Truthcast. You know, every week on our episodes here on Grassroots Truthcast, we try to cover a lot of the political and social and economic and financial and trends of good behavior and bad behavior. I thought it was time to just kick up and meet a friend who wants to sit down and talk about what's good about America, her journey on how she's moved through the business world, her family world, her political world. So I brought on board Diane Canada from Asheville City, Tennessee. Diane, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Gene.
I can go off on the whole bio on Diane Canada. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell us who you are, where you're from, what are you doing?
Sure. So Diane Canada, I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, been here about 22 years this month, as a matter of fact. I'm originally from Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a new grandmother, and had really kind of like a pendulum had kind of swung between two careers most of my life. Started out in management consulting for businesses that were in crisis. So my job was to put on the cape and go into businesses that were going down by the head and kind of pull them up out of the water and set them sail again. That was what I spent a lot of time doing. Incredibly stressful line of work, but great transferable skills to what I'm doing now. And then the other pendulum, when the pendulum would swing the other way, I was in the world of professional songwriting. And so I had been being groomed in Atlanta to come to Nashville with that career. And long story there, but I ended up doing a professional songwriting show eventually that aired for 2 years, syndicated for 2 years in the United States and in three other countries. So we did really well with it. It was kind of, if people know the Bluebird Cafe in Nashville, it was sort of that vibe, like a songwriters in the circle, living room style. Again, very transferable skills because you learn. I always say that Nashville is like the Princeton of songwriting. You know, it's masterful songwriters here. So I got to sit at the feet of the best and play with them. So it was a world-class education in what moves the needle in the human heart. So those,
you know,
two.
There's so many interesting parts of the story that you can share with us today. I saw one of your endorsements came from a Ms. Butler. Any relation to the Larry Butler?
Gigi Butler, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. She was in the music industry before she founded Gigi's Cupcakes.
I don't.
So,
maybe it's a different Butler. Here in Pensacola, we have the widow of Larry Butler, who was a writer, very familiar Floribama Songwriters Festival down here on the Panhandle of Florida.
Yeah, and I know about that. Very, very popular.
So I just thought it might have been the same person. But you know, folks, Diane has a diverse background, not only as a national TV commentator, but she also hosts her own podcasts called Lady Up America Podcast. What's that all about?
That's new. I'm trying to kind of get it dialed in. But yeah, we got serious about it over the last 6 months or so, and I'm excited about it.
Well, good. This is your chance to talk about, where did the Lady Up name come from? Was there some inspiration in your life that someone, did you come up with that name, or did someone else say, hey, Diane, lady it up?
Well, you know, back when I was in the business world, when I was still consulting, I really specialized in women, working with women business owners. After I came out of the crisis consulting, then I tried to go proactive and help them to launch businesses properly from the beginning without getting in those messes, you know? So I don't know. I think it was sort of a term of endearment that I would use with them. I honestly can't remember where, like if there was some pivotal moment where it came up, but it was probably me telling them, okay, you got a lady up, you know, kind of like that, suck it up, man up. It was like this, we got a lady up. This is the business world. It's rough. It's the trenches. And so it started out back then. I used to hold these women's symposiums called Ladylike Leaders. And I don't know, it's just kind of my brand. I'm known as the person, you know, my first book before this next one that's about to be released was Lady Up and Don't Quit. So I've been on this kind of, you know, wave for several years now, and it's just transferred into the political realm now.
Well, check out our website too, folks, www.ladyupamerica.com. Get to meet Diane up close and personal. I think she has a portal within the website where you can contact her directly and engage with her on some of the social and political issues that you may be on your agenda. Diane, you had a political background too. Talk about your jump into politics for a while.
That was never on my radar. Had never been politically active my whole career up until 6 years ago. And we had an event that happened in my family that kind of set the stage for the political realm. My brother, I had a younger brother who had served in Afghanistan as a Marine and came home. He retired out. He had a pretty severe brain injury and severe PTSD. And I'm careful about talking about this story because his son is still waiting to hear the story. But I think listeners can probably surmise that we lost him about, it's been 8 years ago, just about a week before Christmas. And it was devastating. That is a call that no family should get. I can just still feel the ache in my stomach when I got that call. And we were a couple of years into that healing process when I started feeling a very noticeable tug on my heart toward politics. Yeah. And I, you know how when God's working on you and you just start noticing everywhere, like the glaring billboards, what he wants you to do. And I would kind of like pretend I didn't see him. I would kind of look the other. I'm like, no, Lord, you've got the wrong person. Like, you cannot be serious. But I just kept hearing him place it on my heart that he wanted me to run for office. And after about, I don't know, a good couple of years of fighting that, I started to explore it. I got with a coach who I really trusted. She helps me make a lot of major life decisions. She's a Christian too. And we worked down that, we kind of worked it all through. Like she let me process out loud what I was feeling, what I was thinking. And it came to the conclusion, Gene, that he wanted me to dive into the cesspool of politics. And you know,
I got to tell you, I'm quick to say the same. I served two terms as a county commissioner.
I saw that. Yeah.
In the county. And my heart was always in there. I actually felt guilty because my grandfather, an old Italian immigrant who couldn't write English and could barely speak it, ended up, I remember on his deathbed, my father brought me in to meet him, Waterbury, Connecticut, in the early 1960s. Mm. And he looked at me playing with some fandangled toy at the side of his bed. And with my father at my side, he looked down to me and he said, "And you serve your country."
Oh.
This is an old Italian immigrant who could barely speak English. And I said, "Yeah, Grandpa, I will." My father, back in those days, you know, they weren't too transparent on what the medical issues were of Grandpa. So it was sort of hidden from me. I didn't understand the full seriousness and scope of Grandpa's issues. "You sure you're going to serve your country in the future?" "Yes, Grandpa, I will." "You promise?" "I promise." Well, life went on. He passed away a day and a half later. And that stuck with me. I mastered in business and minored in journalism and went off doing all kinds of entrepreneurial things through my life. And later in life, I began to say, you know, I made a promise to my grandfather and I forgot to keep it.
Oh.
And so I'm a little over the hill now to be getting into military service directly, which is what I should have done. But instead, I thought I'd contribute to my country by contributing to my county. And I did that by becoming a local elected official, thinking I had something to offer in office. And I feel the same way you do. It was such a cesspool of bad behavior. In fact, someday I'm going to write a book. Maybe you want to collaborate with me. I'm going to entitle the book, "The Art of Bad Behavior." I have never met such a class of people called politicians,
yes,
who can masterfully make something simple so complex,
oh yes,
and so adversarial where, yes, it need not be.
Yes, and so the egos that go with it.
That's exactly right. So I ended up, I ended up saying, I'm going to have to find a way of serving my community some other way. I got into the political world. But from the political world, as bad as I thought it was, and a lot of people warned me about it, as I'm sure they did to you, I met so many wonderful people.
Yeah.
I was exposed to so many new circumstances. Why, indirectly, because of government, I met some people that had me ended up owning their own radio stations in Mississippi, invite me on as a guest every Friday. And that was the springboard into people you and I have in common that have taken us further nationally, not only on the podcast network, but on the major cable television stations and networks as well. And I see from your bio, you're also a television commentator. Mm-hmm. And that you're now, and that before that, you were specializing with your consulting firm in helping other people get off the ground. Yeah. Talk to me about that.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I want to first honor you for honoring your grandfather. I love that story. And I love that you went back and kept your promise to him. I think that's beautiful. So I just want to honor you for that. You're welcome. It's a really tough thing to run for politics, to go into the political realm and run for office. Like, I think people don't fully appreciate that. Everyone is a lot of the people that I talk to are on trembling knees when they even think about running for office, because they know they've got skeletons in the closet, or they're going into I used to call it going into the lion's den. I have to tell you this real quick, and then I'll answer your question happily. But the night before I turned in my petitions, because, you know, you have to get all these signatures of people that in your district that want you to run. And I was running for state House of Representatives, and, you know, God couldn't start me out like on city council or something. It had to be state House of Representatives. I mean, the deep end of the pool. And the night before I ran, Gene, I was up and down all night, just sick to my stomach. I'm like, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't do it. I got on the phone with my coach the next morning, which, by the way, her name is Grace, of course. And she's like frustrated with me. She's like, Diane, we've been over this for the last year. You know, God's asking you to run. Like, what is your problem right now? And I just said, Grace, I feel like I'm going into the lion's den. And she just laughed at me and she said, oh, you are. And then she said the thing that changed everything. She said, how did that work out for Daniel?
Yeah.
And well, as soon stated, as she said well that, yeah, as soon as she said that, I'm like, you're right. I'm lady up. You're right. I'm going in all in. And that from that moment forward, I didn't complain about it again. Or I'm like, he will be with me. He's angel armies are by my side. He's got my back. He's paving the way. So it's just an act of obedience.
Yes.
For a lot of us that care about our country. And I'll tell you, Gene, it gave me such a deeper love for my country doing that.
Me too. It really did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, before we go into your past consulting, since we're on such a good point, how do you feel about this comment? Since we're both politicians, tried to be. The politician will tell you what you want to hear. The leader will tell you what you need to know.
Yes. Yes.
Give me your comment on that comment.
100% true. 100% true. And for someone who, I mean, you've been in major leadership roles and you've led people for years at a much bigger scale than I have, but I've led women for years. And I can tell you that is 100% true. And one of the things I'll add to that is that when you lead, that means that people are willing to follow you. So you don't lead.
Even when you're wrong.
Yes. Yes. Because they believe in what you believe in, and they have a loyalty to you. They have a reverence for your wisdom or for your experience or for even just for your heart. So they're willing to follow you. They're willing to go into battle with you, you know, and that is something that has to be earned. That is not something that you get just from being assigned a title.
So, well, that's so true. That's true when, and I hope you have this experience someday, because when I ran for office, it was 2 terms. And so when I'm running into my second term as a candidate, I had made some enemies. Some people didn't like the way I voted on certain issues.
Yeah.
But I did the right thing.
Yeah.
And it certainly wasn't self-serving.
Yeah.
In fact, some of the votes I did went against some of my other thought, but it was the right thing for the community.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to the person who didn't like me, I said, look, this isn't really a popularity contest, although many of the politicians rely on it. You don't have to like me, but can you admit that you like what I got done for you the last 4 years?
Yes.
Won't you please vote for me another 4 years and help me out? Because if you don't like me, I got to figure out what I'm doing wrong with you. I must have done something to piss you off. So you're going to have to help me out. But it doesn't matter whether you like me or not. The question is that person going to get the things done that you want? And that's what I think I took away from my 8 years in government and said, more of the nation needs to feel this way. These artificial fortresses we build, fighting each other from different political parties and positions, and this dysfunctional behavior of false narratives being put out there, to me, works against the spirit of Andrew Jackson, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Madison, and the other 14 of them that signed our Constitution, our Federalist Papers, and the Declaration of Independence are people who you and I didn't know, who believed in a principle. And God knows they had their fights. But they came away at the end of the day principled enough. The problem I might submit to you in your comment, please, is what about social media today? So quick to react to the commentary that's out there that we don't even have a chance to digest the merits of the issue.
Well, so many things I want to say on what you just said. I want to elaborate a little bit in some areas that, as far as social media goes, it is, I mean, for when it's used for good, it's amazing, but it can be used for ill and it's destructive. And it's what led me into Lady Up America, into this version of what I'm doing now, which I'll speak on in just a minute. But back when you were saying about being principled and it not being a popularity contest, I think this is something that that even applies today in this current election season that we're in. We may not like a person, their personality, the things they say, the things they tweet, whatever.
But that's for sure.
What we've got to look at the policies. What are the policies that work, and are they willing to stand by them and stand up? I'll go into this more in a little bit, but we have 7 what I call load-bearing walls in our country that our whole Constitution and everything was built on by George Washington and James Madison. All these people, they studied other governments to see what brought them down, and they wanted to put in load-bearing walls in our country to keep us from falling to that same fate. And I mean, they went through literally hell to win this freedom for us. I mean, I remember I was writing in my book recently that, I mean, they were a ragtag organization, right? They didn't have the king's money to buy uniforms and shoes and all this. These men walked through snowy blizzards with fabric wrapped around their feet. And a lot of times the enemy could trace them based on the blood, that they could follow the bloody feet to find out where their enemy camps were, where their camp was. So, I mean, these men went through literal hell to win our freedom. And then they had the impossible task then of going in and setting our government up in such a way where we could maintain it. So studying these other world governments and all of this, these 7 load-bearing walls, right now, what I feel like is we can't make decisions in the highest office in the land based on a personality. We have to look at it like, who's going to hold those, who's going to make sure that those walls stand? And we've got to take the hammer out of the hands of those trying to knock them down. And so
please go ahead.
So that's really the kind of the laser focus that I have right now, is trying to clear a path through that, all these smoke screens that people throw out on social media and big tech, I mean, in big media and, you know, the Hollywood and all these things that are just kind of confusing everyone. And when we hear, you know, that we've got to stand for the soul of our nation, or we've got to stand up for democracy, those are patriotic words. But just like so many other words in our culture right now, they've been redefined, and people don't know what they mean anymore. And so we've got to bring that back. We've got to modernize the approach.
That's a good point.
and not make it seem like we're going backward towards something that's antiquated, but instead we're trying to reinforce load-bearing walls of our country so the roof doesn't cave in. And that's
speaking about the load-bearing walls, you on that same original point, when we colonists were trying to find our way in this new America, distancing ourselves from the British rule, the British monarchy at the time, I remember as we were trying to form our independence, the British coming forward to their their military folks here in the States, you grab every one of those objectors and drag them out of their home and hang them from the highest tree in their front yard as an example for others to see that they shall not violate British rule. Mm-hmm. Well, we didn't stand for that. We continued our quest to figuring it out and creating our government we have today. Mm-hmm. How many people today would ever appreciate what people you and I don't even know, who you and I don't even know, having defended and created a concept of a constitutional republic under the aegis of a democracy, and in those days did it for you and me, and they didn't know you and me.
Yeah, I have to.
It was a principle they were holding up. Who cared about their personality? Back to my first point. They were believing in a principle. And that's what you're doing too today, and why I've enjoyed having you on the show. The things you're talking about, Lady Up, are just principled positions that you believe in. And frankly, guys, for the men watching, it is a Lady Up America profile that Diane manages. But let's get the gender out of it for a second. This is good stuff for the guys too. Am I right?
It is. We love men. And a lot of people missed it. I want to read a quote here real quick in just a second about what you just said. But a lot of people think that they mistake it initially that I am a feminist. And I am not at all. I love and appreciate and honor and respect men. We need good men in our society, good, strong men. This is simply something I'm gearing toward women because I think the women can be the game changers for this moment in time because we are in a culture that's driven by emotion right now. And women have emotional intelligence in spades, just as being women. But then another gear kicks in when you become a mother or a grandmother. It's like that sort of, you get that sixth gear and all of a sudden you become masterfully influential. We know how to do it in our personal lives. Now we just need to translate it to the political realm. So that's why it's Lady Up. But I have had so many men come to my conferences, legislators, all, and they are like, can we stay? We're learning too. Can we stay? I'm like, of course you can stay. But let me, if I may, Jean, let me read this quote that just really drives home what you just said about how they were upholding an ideal for you and for me when they didn't even know us. This is a quote from George Washington. And this is when he was in that bloody battle on the Delaware River this was like the last pivotal battle. And this was Christmas Day. And all of a sudden, a blinding snowstorm came in that they thought would be really hindering, but they were determined to keep going. And what it did is it ended up being the favor of God, because the way that the wind was blowing, it blew all of the blizzard into the face of the enemy. It's an incredible story. But this is what he said as they were gearing up for this battle. He said, "The fate of unborn millions will now depend under God on the courage and the conduct of this army. One cruel and unrelenting enemy leaves us only the choice of brave resistance or the most abject submission. We have, therefore, to resolve to conquer or die." They did that for us.
Very profound. That's beautiful and very profound. And thank you for sharing that. I use another expression that complements that one. Failure to defend the rights of other people may someday result in your rights not being defended.
Amen.
That's what I've noticed about you and why I've enjoyed having you on today's show. You know, there's two women that have been very much in the public eye recently.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's the love for...
Pardon me?
Oh, I'm sorry. It froze for just a second. Go ahead. I missed what you just said.
Yeah, I was just going to say there's two women who've stood out recently in Congress that have done a great job, not only representing women, but representing the United States of America. Marjorie Taylor Greene from Georgia, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Nancy Mace, Congresswoman Mace, both of whom in the House Ethics Committee recently called out Hunter Biden in that sideshow, that antic, that stunt he pulled coming in unannounced, another slap in the face. Mm-hmm. These kinds of bad behavior issues, George Washington didn't write about in what you just quoted.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote about people who are probably less prolific, less anxious to get the limelight, worker bees that were really concerned about the spirit and integrity of this thing we call a democracy in a constitutional republic. I commend those two women, but it's not because they're women. It's because they stood out. I might add, where the hell were the rest of the guys in getting behind them on the same issue? But they gave that Hunter Biden one hell of a spanking on his sideshow departure from the House Ethics Committee meeting a few days back. And I hope something more grave is finally realized. And there's an old saying, if you're going to light the match in the gas tank, don't bitch about the explosion. And well, I fear that's what's happened.
Yeah, the arrogance on parade in this administration is infuriating. It's just so infuriating. And yes, our founding fathers, this is the very thing that they did everything in their power to try to prevent. And, you know, something that I learned that was really interesting, Gene, when I was, you know, doing all my studying, when I ran for office, I mean, I dove deeply into history and the Constitution. And I mean, I knew nothing. I didn't even know what a primary was. I knew nothing. I mean, I knew nothing. Every blue moon, I'd go vote for a president, you know, but I always voted Republican. I met Reagan early on when I was in high school. And so he inspired me. So I always voted Republican, but I didn't know why I was Republican, you know? And so when I ran for office, I really, really studied. And so there were things that I came upon that were really, they aligned with my value system, but they really kind of helped give me the foundation behind them. And one of the things that I learned is that when our founding fathers were building this country, yes, they had been under that oppression that you talked about through King George, and they were doing everything they could to prevent our society being under any kind of religious tyranny. But the one thing that we all had in common here is we had that Christian faith as our common denominator. We knew that this country was going to succeed because of God's favor. And they had kept him in the center of every decision that they made. And they have quote after quote that without a religious society, you don't have a sustainable society. And so you even had to be a Christian to be in Congress in the original 13 colonies, which makes sense. If Christianity is our moral compass for our country, then it would make sense that you should have to be a Christian to serve in office. But they weren't trying to say you had to be a Christian. They're just saying that this is the true north for our country. And so we agree on this. But what they also assumed and agreed would hold us up is the fact that we were self-governing because we all held ourselves accountable to God. And so we knew that if God was the spiritual authority in the household, then the father could be trusted to be that spiritual authority. And then he would respect and honor his wife. And she had all these emotionally intelligent influence skills, right? So she could influence his decisions, but she was doing that from a place of spiritual clarity. And then they raise godly children. And then what comes out of the home spills out onto the streets. So when we start taking God out of everything, we wonder why we have mayhem in the streets. In the administration, the Bidens and a lot of these people have taken full advantage of the chaos. I loved in The Art of War where Sun Tzu basically says that confusion is a war tactic. And so now we're just, and you talked about social media earlier and all the barrage of news cycles that hit us all day long. We're just like in a fog. Most people are on Zoloft, on Effexor. They're on all these drugs. I mean, we have a medicated society who has no idea where the true north is anymore. They're drifting and drifting further from the land. And we can bring that back. Like, again, this is hopeful. The church has to do it. It's not going to come out of Washington. There's no cavalry coming out of Washington. Never has been. The church, the people are where the power is. And now I sound like I'm doing a stump speech. Sorry.
No, that's good. I'm really glad you did. But you know, the key point you've made that impresses me is that we, in the formation of our government, yes, it's Christian based, but our formation and principles in our documents do not deny other religions from existing within that governance. It's just that our principles that were Christian based helped guided us to the formation of these documents. That's indisputable and undeniable. When you look at Hezbollah, Hamas, some of these jihadite Muslims who are in their religious documents out to kill us.
Yes.
Is a fundamental difference.
Yes.
As to whether we should be so benevolent.
Yes. And accommodating.
I mean, if we're so stupid as to not recognize their intention, we might get what we deserve. And that's what I fear about America right now. But some of the other things you've mentioned really drive to like where Diane Canada's coming from. Folks, we're talking to Diane Canada, and she is the author of Lady Up America. And I want her to discuss this book, which is coming out February 8th.
February 8th. This is the proof copy.
Okay, hold the thought. We're going to break away for a commercial. We'll be right back with more with Diane Canada.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and I'm here to tell you about my new product from MyPillow, towels that actually work. Watch this absorbency test. Here's another towel that we randomly went out and bought. Here's one of my towels with a nice design. I don't know if you can see this, but you could line a swimming pool with this. I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it. Towels that actually work. What a concept. I'm interrupting this commercial to let you know you can get our six-piece My Towels, regular $69.98, now only $29.98. Or you can save 25% on our brand new kitchen towels made with the same technology as our famous My Towels. Also, we have bath sheets, bath towels, washcloths, hand towels, and so much more. And the best part, with your promo code, your entire order ships absolutely free. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use that promo code to get deep discounts on all My Towels. And for a limited time, your order ships absolutely free.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Gene Valentino's Grassroots Truthcast. We're here today with Diane Canada from Lady Up America, and you may want to check out her website. What's that website address, Diane?
LadyUpAmerica.com.
Wonderful website. She's got some very collaborative, very informative, very good insight, and a very good understanding of where she's coming from. That's what I've noticed most about it and why I've enjoyed having this interview today. Diane, the show's yours. Tell us about Lady Up America, the February release of your book.
Yes, thank you for letting me mention it. So yes, February 8th, this book is coming out and pre-orders are open now on ladyupamerica.com. But this is, Gene, this is a labor of love the last 3 years. So when I was running for office, as we talked about earlier, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. I wanted to just go in and help veterans after what had happened to my brother. All I wanted to do was go in and change the out processing or veterans that have seen war. I wanted them to get help for PTSD before they were separated. So I was working hard to get that in, you know, because my brother, being a proud Marine, he was like, I'm the toughest, you know, I come from the toughest corps in the world. I don't need therapy. I don't need help, you know. So they're voluntarily getting it when they come out was breaking my heart because we lose 22 veterans a day.
Wow.
To PTSD. Yeah. So anyway, that was all I cared about when I ran for office. But unfortunately, when you run, you don't get to go on the record about just one thing. They start sending you all these questionnaires and you have to fill out all these statements and where you stand on all these issues that I had never thought about before. Like I told you earlier, I thought I was Republican, but I really didn't know why. So that's why I started studying so hard, because it's like, how do I feel about abortion? How do I feel about it? I just never stopped to ask. So when I started going down,
let me interrupt and just say we thank you for your brother's service.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
A lot of unsung heroes like that out there. And I commend you for taking the baton and running with it on issues related to him and his cause, which you can expound upon. Go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And to all of our veterans, our families of veterans, Gold Star families who are listening, God bless you. So what happened was when I started having to go on the record about all of these other topics, I started studying them. Because again, I think from my consulting work, I always got in the habit of looking at things from multiple angles. I didn't just want to stay in an echo chamber or just hear one person's opinion. I wanted to hear all of it so I could sort of shake it all out on the table and then try to start piecing the puzzle together and seeing like what the real story was. So I would take Democrats to lunch and I would say, and I would go spend a whole day in an inner city school and shadow the principal. Or I taught in the prison, the maximum security prison here for 4 years. I mean, I wanted to understand. So by the time I started forming my platform, I felt like I had done it responsibly, but all of these people on social media, I mean, friends that I'd had for 25, 30 years that I loved, that I deeply loved, just started annihilating me on social media and walking out of my life just because they would say, I can't believe you're a Republican. I cannot believe you're a Republican. And they're like, I'm out. And I'm like, what? I was devastated. I'm like, but we've been friends 25. Who cares about our, you know, I love you. And they're like, I just can't. And they'd leave my life. And so I'm,
What was the basis of that, Diane? I've experienced the same thing. I asked the question because I'm having personal experience with that as well. Where's that coming from?
I mean, I personally think it's a veil of deception that is over so many people. Again, that spiritual disconnect. I would take a stand on abortion. I am pro-life. 100% pro-life. I believe that God knitted us together in our mother's womb and he knew us before the foundation of the earth. And so that is God's life to decide the purpose of. It is not our, we don't have the luxury of extinguishing that life out of inconvenience. And I studied abortion and I saw that only 6% of abortions are as a result of rape or incest. And so that means, and even if you double or triple that number, Gene, because so many people don't report it, it's still, we're talking about 80%, 80, 82% of abortions that are out of convenience. And we have a very strong sexually promiscuous society. They've been pushing this on us for years. And I was in that world for a long time. So I'm speaking from experience. I've done it that way. And I've done things God's way. Thank God I evolved and now I'm following God. But I was very promiscuous when I was younger. I was in that. So, and I talk about that a lot in the book. I'm very transparent. I'm not here to judge or point fingers, but I'm just saying his way's better. Well, when I started going on the record about my stand on abortion, a lot of my friends walked away for that. I had one girl that I'd known years and she came on and she said, "You make me want to throw up," when I posted my stand on abortion, and then she unfriended me.
That's sad. I can understand strong opinions, but I make allowances and I'm very tolerant for opinions that are contrary to mine. And yes, I don't unfriend people because they are.
Right.
I try to be accepting to the other side of the story.
Yeah. I think when people are, I'm sorry, go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, I think when people are, this is the only way I can have compassion about it for people, that when you're in the dark, a bright light burns your eyes and it hurts and you just want to get away from it. That's the way I see it. I don't think that these people are mean or, you know, I think underneath, I think they're just in the dark. I think they're just blind right now. And our job is to kind of, we're like on a dimmer, right? Our job is to come into their life with Christ and sort of bring the lights up slowly. You know, I think this is where a lot of Christians and a lot of Republicans go wrong, is we come in and we flip the light on so bright and we just, you know, even if you're right, there's an approach, there's a graceful approach that has to be taken with people. But yes, people just started walking out. And then my son, my adult son, who's in his 30s, just started joining in the chorus one day of these hateful comments. And I'm like, what? I was like, he and I had never talked about politics. I didn't know how he felt. I didn't know what he believed about things. And of course, I ran in 2020 when everything was coming at us. You know, COVID hit, BLM riots were in the street. I mean, everything was really tumultuous. So it was just everybody's emotions were heightened during that time.
Yeah.
But he just starts coming out and making these comments.
Let me interrupt you there and ask you a question. Is whatever his response was it a consequence of, and I'll be frank with you, was it a shortcoming in the way he was raised by you in not understanding the difference, not having a mechanism within his own being to be able to accept a difference of opinion? Or was the difference of opinion so contrary to him that he didn't know what else to do? Did he stop loving you, or was he angry because of the issue?
I think that he was angry because of issues. I think we do bear responsibility. My generation, we're Gen X. My generation did not set good examples for our kids. And I talk about that a lot in the book. You know, the greatest generation, right? My grandfather's generation, the generation of the Great Depression and World War II, I talk about the differences in these generations down into the baby boomers and then kind of what happened in my generation and then how it spills over into theirs, the millennial generation. So we do bear some of the responsibility for this. I always say, you know, if we want to blame BLM, we want to blame CRT, whatever, we need to look in the mirror first and take our part of the responsibility for allowing this void to be filled with such ideology. We did not do our part as the church to raise them with a moral compass. And I'm not going to place blame on why that is, but I do give some pretty valid reasons, I think, in the book of how we got here. But I think it was a combination of that. I think a combination of the CRT in the schools, because it started in his generation, the millennial generation started getting the daily doses of this CRT and we didn't realize it. And that with everything kind of coming to a head in 2020, where all this social pressure over George Floyd and everything, I think it just was a perfect storm. And so we have an epidemic division in families now. And I didn't know how to handle it. So I melted down.
Was this based on our schools and our peer groups suggesting that the child, not your child, any child, was part of a greater community, and that the parents' direct oversight became less or should be less than this greater community, this village of oversight that we hear about from Hillary and others, that, you know, the child isn't really yours. It's part of a bigger community of interest. Not as popular going back to your grandfather and my grandfather, because social media wasn't in your face 1,000 times a day back then, as it is now. Today, the transformation of thoughts can occur so much quicker. And maybe there's room today for people to question the merits of a position without knowing all the facts. That's in parallel, have you noticed, with the breakdown in education and history within the school system itself?
Yes, there are, gosh, we could talk another hour about what I've found out about all that. I would recommend to your listeners to get Kimberly L's book, E-L-L-S is how you pronounce her last name. Her book is called The Invincible Family. And she, much better than I can, really help depict exactly what's going on in the schools with the state eventually owning our children. But she talked about how it's coming from the UN, only a couple of layers deep into the schools, and all of this, and Planned Parenthood and the UN are in bed together on this, and how all of this over-sexualization of the kids, the CRT, all of this division, trying to separate children from their parents, respect for their parents, all of this been going on since the late 80s, early 90s, very intentional. It's all eventually, basically what she says is that Marxism cannot take root until first the authority of God comes out of the home, which we're there. Then the fathers have to come out of the home. There can be no other authority in the home. So the dads have to come out. So we see all this rampant divorce and all this. And then mothers have to be separated from the bond between mother and child has to be separated. So now we see all of this calling birthing people and that we're not necessary. You can make a child in a petri dish now. So we see that once the mothers are disconnected from the kids in the Marxist view, then the state will own the children and full Marxism can bloom. And their ultimate goal is for the state to own the children, to legalize pedophilia, and for that spirit of lust that was in Sodom and Gomorrah, all that we've seen it over the centuries. We look back, it will be in full regalia in America. So moms are the last barrier between full Marxism taking our children, which is why I'm after the moms.
Well, heads up ladies and heads up guys. What Diane has just mentioned is really what I refer to Diane as the three D's: divert, deflect, and distract. And this isn't just within the Biden administration the last 3.5 years. I submit to you, this has been a pattern. The Soros, socialistic, Marxist, communist intentions, yes, to eat the elephant from within. How are we going to destroy America? We're going to have to infiltrate into the, and what was most logical a decade or two ago when it started, the infiltration into our educational system, where this kind of thinking was fermenting. Diane, I think you are spot on with that point. The author's name again, Ells,
Kimberly Ells, and the book is called The Invincible Family.
Yeah, and Diane's book is called Lady Up America, which is about to be released February the 8th. Go to our website, and I presume there's an access point there to which you can find the book. And you, my dear, will be an access point on the Grassroots Truthcast of Gene Valentino's site, www.genevalentino.com. Make sure you join us. We put the podcast, these interviews, in date sequence. So Diane's interview with me here today will appear sometime in the first week or two of February. But it's evergreen. It's good anytime to pick up on this broadcast, because we're talking about social and political issues that affect us lifelong. And I really appreciate you being with us today to delve into this. Hey, folks, people don't realize this, but she speaks to conservative women's organizations and nurtures a growing community of conservative women inside the Lady Up America application. So okay, so don't give the book away, but what else is in there? Anything else you want? Any
hope? Hope is in there. There's so much hope. Good. And not just hope, but practical ways that the everyday mom can actually turn the tide in our country. We can win our country back one powerful conversation at a time at scale. So my goal is to get this into the hands of as many Christian conservative moms as we can, because I'm not trying to turn moms into activists or go stand on street corners or even go run for office. You can change the whole atmosphere and the whole influence in your own home, which I talked about earlier, will spill over into the streets. We get enough moms doing this. Moms, I'm telling you, they're mad. We got the mama bears mad. These are their baby cubs that we're messing with now. They're fired up. They're motivated. They're qualified. They just need to know what to do, how to do it. And that's what the book gives them.
And your website again?
LadyUpAmerica.com.
LadyUpAmerica.com. Any closing comments you'd like to add, Diane?
I just want to thank you so much, Gene, for having me today, giving me the chance to talk about this work and the book. Thank you for all that you're doing. I think God's calling his kids together for such a time as this, and we can push this back. Evil has to flee.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I feel, just from doing these podcasts, I feel a resurgence of Americana. Mm-hmm. I feel a reigniting a spirit of patriotism,
yes,
that exists in this nation. We sometimes compliment and commend our military because we have no other way of expressing ourselves at times, but there's so many good leaders behind the scenes outside of the military as well that have stepped up and stepped out to do what's in the best interest of this nation. And you're doing it now too. So I want to thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us on another episode of our Grassroots Truthcast. We'll have another episode with you coming up forthcoming very shortly as we continue to navigate our way through the social and political issues of today. And we're thanking Diane Canada from Lady Up America, ladyupamerica.com. Go check it out. Order her book and communicate with her directly if you like. She's a great guest on other podcasts as well and has her own podcast sequence as well. Diane Canada, thank you again for joining us. And thank you, folks, for being with us on another issue of Gene Valentino's Grassroots Truthcast.
Thanks for joining us for Gene Valentino's Grassroots Truthcast. Be sure to like and subscribe, and God bless America.